Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about COVID-19 and what the public and private sectors are doing to reverse the direction of this deadly pandemic. So today on the Roundup, we're going to talk about the growing prospects for a COVID vaccine, President-elect Biden's new COVID-19 task force, and what providers are doing to handle the surge in COVID-19 cases. To comment on these topics are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and our new resident expert on the Roundup, Julie Murchison. Julie is a partner at Transformation Capital, and she's the former CEO at Health Evolution. Julie also is on the board of NCQA, so maybe at some point she'll explain HEDIS to us. Julie, welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup.
Thanks so much, Dave. Thanks for having me. It's great to be with the great Daves on a Friday.
Julie, both a pleasure and honor to welcome you to Roundup. We're also looking forward to Julie's first article that we'll publish on our site sometime in the next month or so. It's got a really intriguing title, Leadership Cheese.
Do we know what kind of cheese yet, Julie? I mean, I'm partial to blue, but...
Emmental? No, this will be the secret. You'll have to wait, Dave.
Okay, great. All right, great. And thank you to both of you. Now, before we talk about all the things that happened this past week with COVID, I wanted to ask you both how the latest surge in COVID cases and the spread of the virus has affected you in the past week. Are you taking any new precautions, adopting any new behaviors? Anyone you know test positive? Dave?
My wife, Terry, and I are becoming even bigger hermits than we were before. Chicago is really the epicenter of the explosion in the disease, recent explosion in the disease. So no big Thanksgiving dinner for us this year.
Yeah. Julie, how about you?
Yeah. You know, one of our local high schools just had a case. So a number of the parents in our middle school are quarantining as a result of having children in both schools. So my daughter, who's now back to school 2 days a week, is back with fewer friends, and it's even harder to manage.
It is challenging. We're trying to figure out Thanksgiving right now. The issue is how you can bring four different bubbles together for one event. I'm not sure. I'm pitching a sort of progressive driveway dinner idea. It's not going over so well, but we'll see what happened, because, you know, I think sitting inside around a big table isn't a good idea right now, and I think the CDC would agree. So
are roller skates involved, Dave?
No, but you know, that might push the idea over the top, Dave. So that's a good tip.
I can envision you in your big puffy jacket and your hat. It's gonna be good.
Excellent. All right. On that note, there was a lot of other COVID news this week. Dave, what's happening on the vaccine front that's giving you hope? What do you see out of the Biden camp that's giving you hope?
On the vaccine front, of course, the big news was Pfizer's announcement this week that its RNA-based vaccine had a 90% success rate in phase 3 efficacy trials. That beat industry expectations by a country mile. The FDA and World Health Organization only require a 50% success rate for licensing. Pfizer is ramping up production of its vaccine, 50 million doses in 2020, 1.3 billion doses in 2021. It's also taking charge of its vaccine distribution. That's important because their process requires two shots and cold storage at 80 degrees below zero centigrade. You'd really need a puffy jacket for that, Dave.
Okay.
On the Biden front, the very, very first thing they did was to name a 15-member coronavirus task force with three co-chairs, diverse expertise, deep experience in immunology, public policy, public health. Importantly, no family members, no radiologists masquerading as infectious disease experts. Secondly, and to no one's surprise, the president-elect appointed Ron Klain to become his chief of staff. That's relevant to this discussion because Klain led the successful Ebola task force during the Obama administration, which did come up with a vaccine. Here's a fun fact. Terry and I took aerobic classes at Columbia Law School with Ron Klain's future wife, Monica Medina. Finally, Biden announced yesterday that he would appoint a coronavirus czar in the White House to take care of and direct all public safety measures, as well as vaccine production and distribution. The Biden administration, or the incoming Biden administration, is clearly making the pandemic both priority one and job one. All good news this week, except for the horrific increases in infection rates.
Julie, what's your take on the vaccine news and on the Biden COVID-19 task force news? What do you like about that? What do you have concerns about? Anything?
Yeah, Dave mentioned the supply chain and Pfizer taking over their own distribution. And it's fascinating to watch. You know, the government secured a relationship with McKesson to distribute vaccines, and Pfizer politely declined that, mostly due to the cold storage, I think probably exclusively due to the cold storage requirements. And I think this is something that most people who are not following this news really closely don't understand, are the distribution requirements. And it's amazing to me to see Pfizer talk about its reliance on DHL, FedEx, UPS, you know, traditional means. They have GPS trackers on every, or they will, on every single box. So it's being controlled in a really tight way, but the distribution is a huge challenge. And most Americans think, oh, vaccine, great. And I'm not sure it's that easy. So let's just hope it gets approved. That's the most important thing. A few things about the vaccine also that I think are not seeing the headlines are that it's unclear whether some of the patients involved in the trial have underlying conditions. So its applicability to some of the most vulnerable. And also just exactly what it does. Does it make the symptoms more mild, reduce severe outcomes? So there's a little bit more to learn on the data front to really understand how it can be most useful. Let's see, on Biden, you know, I have to say the task force just made me giddy. It feels like it's real to see real scientists, as Dave said, who have years and decades of experience really weighing in here on transition is just so hugely important. I love that. And I have to say this transition group that Biden is pulling together on COVID to really dig into how will the entire government in a very coordinated way build infrastructure and address COVID as an issue at the federal level. I mean, this is what we've been missing for so long. And these are powerhouse players. These are experienced folks like Vivek Murthy and Zeke Emanuel and others who are, you know, playing on both the task force and the transition group. But this transition group is, you know, it's power and it's ready for developing a sustainable response. And I think as Americans, we should all breathe a sigh of relief knowing that at least we have people who have experience and are going to get in there and think in a very strategic way.
Got it. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
Julie is spot on that while the Pfizer news is great news, it's still very, very early and there's so much we don't know. You know, the global effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine may be the biggest example and the most massive example of a coordinated effort toward a scientific goal in the history of humankind. There are over 400 vaccine candidates in development. About a quarter of those are in trials at some phase or another. There are five different categories of approaches. They have different costs, mechanics, distribution. They will have different duration of effectiveness, efficacy, side effects. One of the things I worry about is, given this heroic effort, but also given the scope of the challenge, is the potential for real variation in the outcomes of some of these vaccines. And as they go to the marketplace, the public, particularly the American public, which already distrusts vaccines, is probably going to have to experience some ups and downs and surprises. And to Julie's point on the task force and the coordination level, I'm really hopeful that the communication that goes out to the public is honest in saying heroic effort, but there's a lot that we don't know, and we'll do the best we can to keep you informed as we go along.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about what's happening at hospitals and health systems across the country. Julie, what impact is the new surge in COVID cases having on providers, and are providers in a position to handle it?
Dave alluded to this at the beginning, but I think as many people know, Tuesday, We hit our highest number of hospitalizations and highest number of cases yet in COVID since March. And I didn't see the numbers for yesterday. Maybe we even beat it again. But a lot of experts think that we will continue to beat this number. And that should be disturbing to all of us. And, you know, what's happening for providers is, unlike the spring spike, this is now deep into rural areas. And it's really all over the country at the same time. It's not like we were just hotspotting in New York and sending resources from all over New York. So even though hospitals and health systems have had a lot more time to prep, to prepare and really think about how do they keep elective procedures or other, frankly, bread and butter of the hospital going while COVID is happening. And I think they've come a long way on how to handle these surges. What they're running into is that there's just not enough clinicians in many parts of the country. And they can't really send clinicians in from other parts of the country because COVID's hitting there as well. So this is really a major, major resource issue that we're seeing. And we're seeing states like Indiana bringing back retirees into the workforce, of course, many of them who are likely vulnerable as well, to come in and fill in. We're seeing states like North Dakota saying that if you are COVID positive and asymptomatic as a healthcare worker, you can continue to work in the healthcare environment. So we're going to really great lengths to keep people working in the healthcare sphere. And, you know, it's worrisome. You know, I think patient volumes have been up, so that's good news for hospitals, but they're quickly starting to cancel elective surgeries where they need to just get resources focused on the most important patients.
Got it. Thanks, Julie. Dave, what's happening at hospitals and health systems, and are they better prepared now than they were in the spring?
They're definitely better prepared, but as Julie said, the demand is overwhelming, and the burden on the staff is becoming unbearable in some places. And Julie, just so you know, the number yesterday was almost 160,000 new infections. So we broke yet another record. In terms of being better prepared, the death rates are way down. And sort of the good news and bad news is, unlike in the spring, where the outbreaks were localized and really traumatized markets like New York, this is a national outbreak. So 60,000 hospitalizations is spread out in a way that it wasn't in the spring. But having said that, and to Julie's point, that means healthcare workers really can't travel to fill in and in the way we were doing in the spring. And we've seen what happens when areas get overwhelmed. I mean, New York got overwhelmed for a couple of weeks and people couldn't get into hospitals. They were dying at home. They were dying in taxi cabs on the way to hospitals, waiting for ICU beds and so on. So it's going to be remarkably tough on the frontline healthcare workers.
Pretty scary. Julie, anything else to add to Dave's comments?
Well, Dave covered it all, of course, as he always does. But I would add that you're starting to see the unraveling of political infrastructures and clinical leadership infrastructures around politics, and people really blaming the plandemic theory that this is not real. And to the extent that you start to see that happening, it's a whole nother level of warfare, I think, that we haven't really seen in our healthcare system as it relates to politics, you know, during the pandemic. So it's concerning when that happens.
Dave, any reaction to that? This politicizing of healthcare frontline workers?
It's just so sad. And the politicization goes two ways. I think you're going to see the AMA and the AHA probably overreach in their demand for resources in ways that could become counterproductive longer term for healthcare reform. But we simply have to figure out a way to get through the winter. So extra resources to address this specific crisis are absolutely essential.
Got it. Let's shift gears a little bit, and maybe we'll end up on the same topic, but let's talk about next week. Julie, what do you predict will be the big healthcare story next week?
Well, of course, I would hope that we would see a little bit of movement on the political front that would allow Biden to start to really move in and address healthcare, but I can't exactly predict that will happen next week.
All right, Dave, what's the big healthcare headline?
On the news front, beyond healthcare, I think the big story is is where's President Trump? He seems to be holed up in the basement. It's a little like where's Waldo. So I think we're going to start seeing the trackers out trying to figure out where he is. On the healthcare front, other than the obvious issues on the pandemic, I think we're going to start to see real speculation about Biden healthcare appointees at HHS, CMS, and FDA, and so on. So there'll be talk on that this coming week.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You can also find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.